A very good afternoon to you. You're listening to Kildare Focus here on KFM Radio with me, Ciara Noble. How are you doing? Welcome on in. Coming up this afternoon, you heard it there on our headlines with Ross. But Sarsfield's GAA club in Newbridge, there have been two break-ins on two consecutive evenings over the weekend at the clubhouse. We'll speak to the chairperson in about 10 minutes' time to hear about the situation. We have been in touch also with local Gardaí who are investigating the situation. We'll speak with Cry Ireland, C-R-Y. That's cardiac risk in young people. They're looking for volunteers to join their helpline. SIP2 will discuss the survey revealing childcare facilities face potential closures. That is due to staffing crisis. And finally, we'll finish with Salon's Trad Fest. That's taking place this weekend. And of course, I'd love to hear from you. Get in touch. It's 0833 97 97 97. That is WhatsApp and text lines. And I might give you a play of the mystery sound. I'm not giving it away this hour. Neither is Ben or anything like that. But the more times you listen to it, maybe it might be easier to get it right. And you know me, I want everybody to get it right. So we might give that a play also.
Kildare Focus with Ciara Noble.
Owen and I discussed this morning on the newspaper review on Kildare Today, but 50 new cost rental homes are available this afternoon in Newbridge. It's at Beelan Woods, and TUA are the agency behind them. And I'm delighted to say I'm now joined by the communications and policy manager with TUA. That is Fiona Egan. Good afternoon to you, Fiona.
Hi, Ciara. Thanks for having me.
Thank you very much for joining us. So tell us a little bit about TUA before we let people know about what's happening this afternoon.
Yeah, so TUA Housing, we're one of Ireland's largest approved housing bodies. We have about 8,700 homes all over the country. We work with each and every local authority to deliver affordable, social affordable housing all over the country. So we're delighted to be now working on cost rental housing as well.
Now, obviously, it's a great day for the people of Newbridge because there are 50 cost rental homes, a lottery opening today. And the rent for these homes, they begin at €1,130. That is for a two-bedroom, and €1,300 a month for a three-bedroom house. What time are the applications opening, or have they already opened this afternoon, and how long will it run for?
Yeah, they're actually live now on our website. So you can either go through DAFT, which will link you to our website, or directly on tuahousing.ie, and you'll see the cost rental section there. So obviously people have to be eligible to apply. An important thing to note is that the net income for the applicants is 53,000 net, so that's after tax per household. And so as you said, Ciara, the two beds are 1,130 and the three beds are 1,300. And I've actually just had a little look on DAFT there today to see what's available to rent in Kildare, and I think there's about 26 homes in the entire county. So these 50 homes are, it's an amazing opportunity for people in that income bracket to apply for housing.
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of people strapped within that income bracket, and just, you know, buying a house is out of reach, and they obviously do not fall into the potential social housing system because of the amount they are, and they don't qualify for social housing supports. So the scheme comes in a week in which TUA, it's officially opening its first South Dublin cost rental scheme. That's at Kilcarbery Grange, Clondalkin, and Parklands in City West, obviously just up the road from us here Kildare.
Yes, so already this year we've delivered 25 homes in Dunleary, cost rental homes, and another 118 have just been, all the homes have just been finished being allocated, and the Minister will officially open those tomorrow. And look, speaking to those tenants in the last few weeks, haven't been out there regularly. Look, you've people coming from private rented, people who were living at home and couldn't afford to rent privately, or I know one couple were expecting a baby and really didn't know what they were going to do because they just couldn't get properties anywhere. So they're moving into a two bed now. They've moved in and they're due in November. So like, just the security they will have, not to mention the affordability of these homes, But I think the security of tenure has come across as being one of the most important aspects of cost rental to these tenants.
Yes, and the chairman of TUA Housing, which is Professor Paddy Gray, he has said that the cost rental housing projects offer moderate income households the choice of a more affordable, long-term and stable form of a rental tenure that exists presently, with the added benefit that their rent will not be driven by price changes in the private rental market. And as you noted, including the Newbridge Housing, TUA will provide a further 250 homes in Dublin, Kildare and Louth. That's over the next year. As I said, the scheme in Kilbeelan, the prices start at €1,130. And that is the amount, I guess, in terms of the difference. Sorry, excuse me. I am just having trouble here with my computer. Apologies about this. We know that the prices offer 40% below the average local area rent, and it's still incredibly high, and people will still be struggling with that, even though it's great news.
Yeah, look, they are affordable compared to the market. They're not actually linked. The rents are created by, it's to cover the cost of delivering, managing and maintaining the homes. So it's not linked to market rent. But if you were to look at it, at the moment, if you wanted to rent a three bed in the Newbridge area, I see only one on draft at the moment at 2,100. So it does represent a huge decrease in that. Obviously, these people will be on a net income of less than 53,000, so it should be affordable to them. The aim is that it's not more than 33% of their income. So far, tenants are saying that they'll be able to save more, and just again referring back to that security that they'll have, knowing that they won't be asked to leave their property. So it's not all financial, it's also just that security of tenure as well for these people.
Absolutely. And just to let people know that they're expected to be delivered on a phased basis. That's between October and December this year. As I said, offering prices 40% below the average local area rent. So is that a definite there, Fiona, that people will be in their homes, those 50 cost rental homes, between October and December, the final quarter of this year?
Yes, look, that's the hope. Some of the homes are already almost ready, so the 50 will go, they are all up for to be applied for today, and then the hope is that in the next few months all of those homes will be let.
Okay, and Fiona, just once again go through how people can apply, make that application. The lottery is open from today.
Yes, so either through daft.ie, which will direct you to our website, or directly to our website, which is tuahousing.ie, and you will see it on the main page there. We're expecting a huge number of people to apply, and it's very exciting. A great new form of housing tenure for the country and for today for Kildare.
Well, thank you so much for joining me. That is Fiona Egan. She's Communications and Policy Manager with TUA Housing. 50 new cost rental homes in Newbridge. You can head on to daft.ie, as Fiona pointed out, or tuahousing.ie to apply for those homes. 50 new cost rental homes. And Newbridge-based Senator Fiona O'Loughlin has had a press release released a little earlier today. She said progress is being made. This is to secure the pathway from Beelan Woods through the linear parks. So obviously, maybe in the minds of people who want to get into that lottery for those 50 new cost rental homes, which are in Beelan Woods, she said she's been working closely with Kildare County Council to deliver the linear pathway as set out in the Newbridge Development Plan. She says it's imperative that we ensure that the people of Newbridge do not have to cross the extremely busy road to use the pathway, and that there is a continuous pathway along the riverside. She says she's confident that progress is being made by Kildare County Council in connection with Glenveagh Homes, obviously the builders there, to ensure that a road crossing will not be necessary. She's noted that trees will need to be cut down to facilitate this, and she says she's keen to ensure the pathway causes minimum damage to the existing trees and other flora in the park. Sarsfield's GAA did put up on their social media that on Sunday that the clubhouse was closed due to a break-in that happened at about 5 a.m. on, going from Saturday night into Sunday morning. And I was on to the guards a little earlier on today about that. So on the Saturday night into Sunday morning, the 21st of August, at about 5 a.m., a quantity quantity of alcohol was taken from the premises. That is at the clubhouse. But unfortunately, the next night, just last night, the 22nd of August at 5 a.m, again, the clubhouse was broken into. There was a lot of damage done. The guard used the words ransacked, and nothing supposedly was taken. So damage done from two break-ins on two consecutive evenings. It's not something you hear of. And I am joined now by the chairperson of Sarsfields GAA Club. That is Brendan Ryan. How are you today, Brendan?
Not too bad, Ciarán, yourself?
I'm grand, thank you. Obviously not a good weekend for the club.
No, not really. It's a kind of an ongoing issue there now. It's coming back and forward. But it really got reached the height of new levels this weekend. Happened on in the club.
What do you mean an ongoing issue? This has happened a few times before, or
well, not necessarily the break-in, but there's undesirables hanging around the area. There's a derelict house to the left of Sarsfields, and it seemed to be being used by people in there, wherever they're doing smoking, drinking, or whatever.
And that derelict house has actually gone alight a few times.
Yes, it has indeed, yes. And that's, they seem to be coming from there or coming through in around that hedge into Sarsfields. Last week we had an incident on our third pitch where it set fire to the back of our nets for the ball stop nets for the goals at the base of one of the telegraph poles that hold the net in place. They damaged the junction box for our floodlights. We put in a walking track lately, only opened up in the last 2 weeks, all voluntary work. We put a fence around it, and they broke the fence and set the fence on fire. That was last week. And then Saturday night, they broke the window, took all the alcohol to get out of there, brought it all down by the side of the pitch, and discarded all the empties onto the ground that had drunk or spilled or whatever. And then we couldn't believe it. Got another call this morning. The second window, beside the one that was broken already, broken in bits, and they ransacked the bar inside. Now, this time, there was a lot of blood around, so somebody out there is bleeding, and somebody might know, a family friend or a friend might see somebody with a bad cut, wherever they got a leg or arm, I don't know.
Like, you know, you're speaking about the walking track. I did see that on social media, obviously, over the past couple of weeks. It was opened up and done by volunteers and, you know, wanting something good for their community and area. But something like that, and the alcohol and the damage to the windows, etc. Financially, how much of a hit is that to the club?
Well, the amount of alcohol that was taken, you're talking roughly between 1,500 and 2,000 euro. To replace the glass, you're talking maybe possibly another 500 to 1,000 euro. Now, if we have to get shutters for the glass and for the door, we'll have to get some kind of security on it. If we go for new shutters, look at 15,000 to 20,000.
For just the shutters?
To put up new shutters in the window and the door of the bar, looking at 15,000 to 20,000.
And I don't want you to go into too much detail, as in not giving me details about how it's done, but, you know, security for, you know, GAA clubs and obviously your own GAA club.
Yes.
I'm sure it's something that's top of the list. So it's not as if it's something that slips through the cracks and isn't thought about. So there are security protocols and secure surroundings in the clubhouse itself. You know, massive gates, obviously, you know, the windows, a lot of them covered over.
Yeah, every window in nearly every window is covered by a grill.
Yeah.
Apart from these two and the door, were never covered by a grill. We have an alarm. The alarm went off twice, obviously, and the alarm company rang us when it went off, and we got a couple of call outs during the night. And the security man was there on yesterday morning. No, he wasn't there this morning, but I got a call from the guards anyway regarding that. Well, we have a gate, the car park is closed all the time. And just to add further, from last night, speaking of the car park, one of the lads' cars, the players, left his car in the car park overnight and they damaged it. They broke all the wipers off it, they took the number plate off it, and they scratched every panel on the car with a stone or some kind of instrument on his car.
So, you know, what next for the club? What, you know, you have all that in place currently.
Yeah.
So where else do you go? And when you do go, you know, I guess to a higher level of security, that's going to cost.
Yes, CCTV, the cameras, is probably next in line. And look at, again, another 30,000. The money we haven't got, it's simple as that.
So we'd say, you know, this evening it's not going to be at a higher level of security. I'm sure it's not going to happen the next day. What will happen over the next few weeks?
Well, we're going to have to get some kind of ongoing discussions with the community Gardaí and maybe whoever the council own that derelict house at the moment, as far as I know, and talk to them. Maybe they can do something with that house and block it off,
okay,
or something. I don't know what you can do, but there is people out there just are wanting vandals, and nothing else will do. Just keep them happy, only break things up, and it's the right community efforts that we are trying to do, build up for our club, for the community, to make kids happy and feel safe there.
Okay, well, we will get on to the County Council and whoever else may need to be contacted in regards to that derelict house. And I think a lot of people do know where you're speaking about there, Brendan, right beside Sarsfields, to the left of Sarsfields when you're looking at the entrance, if that makes sense. Thank you so much, Brendan, for taking the time. I know it's been probably a pretty crap couple of days, but thank you for talking to me. That is the chairperson of Sarsfields GAA, Brendan Ryan. Two break-ins at the clubhouse over the weekend on the early hours of Sunday morning and the early hours of this morning. Elaine Wheeler, who's the Family Support Programme Coordinator with CRY Ireland. CRY is cardiac risk in young people. And Elaine is on the line now. Good afternoon to you, Elaine.
Hi, Kira. Thanks very much for giving us the time this afternoon. Thank you.
Well, thank you for talking. So we're going to be specifically focusing on the volunteers for your helpline. But first, go through what CRY does, how you are set up, and just about the whole organisation.
Sure, yeah. So CRY, as you know, stands for Cardiac Risk in the Young, and we're a small charity based in Talla in Dublin 24. And CRY was set up back in 2002 by Michael and Mary Green after the sudden cardiac death of their 15-year-old son, Peter. And at that time, back in 2002, Michael and Mary, I suppose, they came together and realised there wasn't much support or information about young people dying in this way in Ireland. So they did their research. They concentrated on a lot of fundraising. As to where we are today, then basically we have a state-of-the-art screening centre in Talla, opposite the gates of Talla Hospital. And that's a free service to people who have been affected by sudden cardiac death, or as we know it, Kira, SADS.
So what do you mean, those who've been affected? Those who are genetically or biologically related? Can it be anybody who can go for that screening, or does it have to be
somebody? It can't be anybody. You know, it is very much a clinical, you know, based on the clinical need. But obviously, if somebody thinks they may have been affected, they can get in touch with the screening centre, which I can give the details of.
Yeah.
And Dr. Deirdre Ward, who's our lead cardiologist in the screening centre, then would look at the referral and see, is this family appropriate for the clinical or the screening programme that we do? So that I suppose, is one half of, you know, the work that we do within CRY. And then the other part of the charity is the emotional support.
Can I just ask you about the screening programme, just before you leave it? You know, and now you're mentioning emotional support programme, which is obviously amazing, organisations like yourself giving that. But I'm sure, does it help those who've been affected, the families, etc., screening processes, things like that? Can it help with the impact, I guess, of grief and, I guess, healing emotionally as much as one possibly can?
Well, I suppose when we set out to extend the family support programme, you know, a lot of the support CRY were giving since 2002 was done by a very small team of people from the office in Talla. And now we're extending that programme. But what we found with talking to mums and dads and siblings and loved ones who have lost a young person through sudden cardiac death is that by talking to other people, other loved ones, other mums and dads, that there's huge healing in that. Because the loss, as we've all been touched by death or bereavement in some fashion, I suppose, Kira, over the years and within our families. But the suddenness of a young, fit and healthy person without any warning, just dropping, collapsing and dying very suddenly, it's very specific grieving, I suppose, very specific bereavement process that goes on for these people. And a lot of the mothers, particularly, that came about 14 months ago to us to volunteer on the helpline, said, you know, at the time when we lost, you know, Michael or Mary or their son or daughter, if we had this emotional support, if we had other parents and siblings and loved ones who travelled a similar journey to help us at the time that when we lost our child, it would have been very beneficial. And I suppose it's with that in mind that we are now developing the family support programme and the helpline, because we know that for people that have travelled a journey like this, how they can help, benefit, kind of mentor, if you like, somebody that's in the early stages of grief or dealing with this in more recent times. So there's huge power and support in that, we feel, and that's what we've been told by the parents that have been affected in this way.
I mean, it's hard not to get emotional, you know, even just trying to put yourself in the shoes of those people. And then, you know, those who are affected by it, giving their time to volunteer and try and help other people. Like, it's a pretty amazing cycle when you think about it.
It is.
And obviously you're on today to hopefully get some people listening to volunteer for your helpline.
Yeah, well, we've launched the helpline as the free phone helpline. And it's, you know, we're looking for people to ring at any time. We offer this emotional support in, you know, the whole of Ireland, the north and south, all counties. And we've 24 wonderful volunteers from every county nearly in Ireland that give their time and their commitment every week on the helpline. At the moment, the helpline is available to people on Sunday afternoons, Tuesday and Thursday evenings, and a little slot on a Wednesday morning as well. But, you know, as many of our volunteers have come and said, you know, a year in, we're looking at how we could, I suppose, make it better, you know, get more support in there for families and loved ones. And the volunteers themselves have said, you know, grief doesn't just hit on a Sunday afternoon or Tuesday or Thursday evening. Grief is always there. So with that in mind, we're looking really to extend the hours of the helpline so that we can be there as much as we can be there for people who are, I suppose, are dealing with a bereavement, a recent bereavement, and also for those maybe that haven't, you know, have lost somebody in the years gone by but have never looked for support. And also for those people who possibly now live with the genetic cardiac condition, that they have been screened and maybe they've been told that they need to live, you know, have a complete different lifestyle now because they've been diagnosed with a cardiac condition. So we also support those people and their families and loved ones. But to do that, of course, we need the goodwill and the commitment of people, I suppose, that have a little bit of time on their hands and that would like to volunteer with us. So that's why I'm on with you today.
And Elaine, what, you know, are there certain attributes these people should have when volunteering? Like, is there anything that they need to know or anything they need to have, would say, studied before they get involved with that?
No, not necessarily, Ciara. Like, you know, we do a 3-day training program, which we have designed, and it's based on the concept of active listening. Now, active listening, just to give you a short, just a brief synopsis of what that is, it's not counselling, it's not giving advice. It's to offer a safe place for somebody to pick up the phone and ring somebody that they don't know, that's not their family, that's not their neighbour, that's not their friend, and to be able to talk confidentially to that person about whatever is going on for them, whether it's about the death of a loved one or maybe the family dynamics that are associated with having lost somebody or whatever it is, and that they can feel listened to and they can feel heard. Because a lot of the time, you know, we're all great at Irish people particularly, I think, at giving advice and saying, you know, you should do this and you should do that. It's not that at all. It is based on active listening skills. But actually that's quite, you know, it's quite unique in itself. We all think we're good active listeners, but we're not. We're all great at giving advice. But what the 3-day training program, which is done online, which will be done remotely over Zoom in September, it just allows potential volunteers really to really reflect on their own practice and how good at listening that they are. So we say, we talk about sympathy and empathy. So there's listening to somebody and letting them tell you their story. And then there's, you know, being that sympathetic ear. We don't want you to be, you know, the volunteer to be sympathetic, but to listen with empathy. So you're listening so that the caller really feels that they're being heard. And that is something quite unique, Ciara, and it
Absolutely.
Just does take a little bit of tinkering with. So that's why we invite people who volunteer with us to come on this 3-day training programme. And in itself, that training has proved to the 24 volunteers that are currently trained and taking calls on the helpline. It's nearly like a support mechanism for those volunteers and those people who have been affected also.
And Elaine, just to give out your details, because obviously people can get in touch with you. Of course, you're the family support program coordinator with CRY. They can get in touch with Elaine on 087-217-4205 or the email ewhelan@cry.ie. We'll have those details up on our website in the next few minutes. But just to let people know, the CRY helpline free phone for here in the Republic of Ireland, 1800-714-080. And the email is info@cry.ie. ry.ie. Thank you so much to Elaine Whelan, as I said, the Family Support Programme Coordinator with Cry Ireland. Now, SIP2 have revealed childcare facilities face potential closures. That is due to a staffing crisis. We've discussed that issue many times before. Owen did refer to it in this morning's newspapers. And this is a survey of more than 1,977 managers and staff. That's in the early years childcare sector. And it's indicating that many services may be restricted or face potential closure. That's due to an inability to recruit and retain staff. And something basic that I'm thinking this time of year is that many teachers will need their children to go back to childcare when they re-enter the classrooms in the next week or 2 weeks. And I'm joined now on the line by Dara O'Connor. He's Head of Organising with SIP2. Good afternoon to you, Dara.
Good afternoon.
I'm sure the results weren't that surprising to yourselves at the union.
No, unfortunately not. And really, they kind of reflect the conversations that we're having all over the country with managers and workers about what's happening out there at the moment. And really, we have a lot of services that they're struggling to recruit new staff. They're finding it difficult to hold on to the staff that they already have. And really, when you ask them what's going on, it boils down to the rate of pay that's being offered at the moment.
Can we just touch on that for a moment? Because the difficulty, I'm sure, does revolve around the rate of pay. And we know, I don't need to tell anybody, but things have gotten more expensive. Living is more expensive these days. And, you know, people had two and a half years of COVID, and a lot of those people would have, especially in the childcare industry, would have worked through the pandemic and obviously would have had maybe a little bit more savings than they previously would have because of the closures in society. But now they just cannot fathom living this life on the pay that they're receiving. Like, what are we talking about, Dara? Like a yearly salary for somebody?
Well, I think it's a really good point that you made. Like, I think people's attitude towards childcare or the earlier sector really shifted during the pandemic. So all of a sudden, people really appreciated, personally, I know all about this myself, just how vitally important it is. So, you know, so the rates of pay that people might be on, you know, the average rate of pay for an early years educator, so someone, you know, the bulk of the sector, is around €11.50 per hour. So you can imagine, you know, if you're
that's
working,
that's below the living wage.
Yeah, it's well below the living wage. And so, you know, you're talking about maybe 23,000-24,000 a year. For, you know, for a qualified educator.
And I mean, if we want to put this into context, they are taking care of the people that are most important to so many members of the public here in Ireland, to them in their lives, their children, you know, the absolute top tier of their needs and wants is making sure that their children are safe, taken care of, etc., etc. Yet the pay is so incredibly awful.
Yeah, exactly. And there's a lot of it which is around, you know, affordability is a huge issue for parents. You know, it just costs so much. But you have to think about quality as well, because we know that, like, really good quality care and education can have, like, long-term positive impacts for children. And how you do that is you need to have, you know, qualified people, but there needs to be a consistency of relationship between the kid and the educator. So, like, if there's a new educator meeting you at the door every month, well, they're not able to build up that relationship, that trust, you know, the kind of the attachment that you need to have between kind of the staff and the child. So really, the low pay bit is where people can't afford to stay in the sector. They just can't make it work financially. So they're going to work in other sectors, other professions, or they're going down to work in Lidl and Aldi where they can get more pay and less stress.
Like you said, you know, unsurprisingly, this has resulted in an annual staff turnover of 19%. And that is according to the most recent Pubble early year sector profile of 2020 to 2021. So the height of the pandemic, a majority of early years educators earn below the living wage, which is $12.90 per hour, while a lead educator, that's with an honours degree, earns €13.21 per hour. That's on average.
Yeah, and you know, as much as people love their job, the work that they do, love can't pay the bills. So people are being, exactly as you said, yeah, the cost of living is going up. basic things like putting petrol in the car to be able to get to work, or the groceries that you're buying every week. It's getting harder and harder for early years educators. And certainly that's why we need a pay deal, which is hopefully coming to a conclusion now and should be in for September. Because
as in next month.
Yeah, exactly. We've been kind of in talks over the last, the talks have concluded.
You seem pretty confident about that.
In a
positive way.
Yeah, I think it's the start of that journey towards recognising the educators and kind of professionalising, you know, the paying conditions of the sector. And I've been on this show before, and you've talked about it at length previously, about how the impact of low pay, and we've been campaigning, and thousands of union members have been campaigning, and the government listened, and certainly they've stepped up to the mark in the last budget, and they put the money on the table to be able to improve pay, to make that first pay deal come about. So we're hoping, touch wood now, all this is going to come into a place in September, hopefully in the coming weeks.
Okay, so yeah, literally just weeks away, believe it or not, September is. Thank you so much for your time this afternoon. That's Dara O'Connor. He's the head of organising with SIP2. And just to give some responses from some of those surveyed, Dara touched on loving your work. One person literally said, I love working in the early years sector, but I'm not paid enough to stay long term. I'm 53 and I need to secure my future financially. That's a very good point. And as it is, I live from paycheck to paycheck. Another person said, there is a shortage of good teachers out there because the paying conditions are appalling for the amount of stress they endure and the years of study. And the lack of staff, from another respondent, entering the profession brings a lot of stress and work onto those who are left due to the very high turnover, as Dara did point out there. And if people were answering, yes, they did leave the sector, why? 65.33%, to be precise, left to improve their pay in another job. 13, just over 13% left to return to education or training. Just over 7% retired or they're no longer working. Just over 34% stress burnout. That's, so impactful to people's lives, stress burnout. It's terrible. And I guess it's that invisible kind of condition that people can't understand one is suffering with. And 8.4% said that they didn't know. In the last 12 months, did you have to recruit staff? 83.64% said yes. So huge turnover in the childcare sector. Coming up after this short song, we'll be speaking about Salins Tradfest, which is taking place this weekend. Now, I mentioned Salins Tradfest. It is taking place this weekend, which is the 26th to the 28th of August. I have, the programme or leaflet in my hands, and it's absolutely gorgeous, like the images on it as well. But you can also go online. That's where I did see it originally. It's sultnasalon.ie. SultnaSolan, and you can find out all the details there. And I'm happy to say I am joined by Dee O'Connor and Siobhan Grogan. They are both of Sultna Salon, I should say, Failina Salon. How are you guys this afternoon?
Great.
It's nice to have people in the studio. It's been a while. It's weird to be speaking to you across the way. It's nice. I guess to begin, Dee, how did you get involved with Failina Salon?
Oh, well, I've been involved with Sultna Salon for many years. We were just saying, I think we probably 12 years on the go since we formed, first of all. And then about 10 years ago, we started our first festival, Salins Tradfest. So that was 2013, and we're still going.
And the pandemic affected the Tradfest going ahead?
It did.
Okay.
But we did manage to do two videos, which we put online, and they're at the bottom of the failinasalon.com if anybody wants to have a look at them. So we kept it going. It was a sort of a virtual festival for the 2 years. But But we didn't want to let it lapse. So this is our first live one now.
I was going to say, it's really nice to come back. Like, everybody's excited. What about you, Siobhan? How did you get involved? Because I've been already speaking to you guys, saying, unfortunately, I'm not the best at the El Guelga, but you are the Guelgor in the room right now.
Yeah, but I have to say, I was in your seat not so long ago, where I was saying I'm not the best at the old Guelga. So I came back to Guelga as an adult. My Irish wouldn't have been something to boast about in school at all. but I felt I was missing out on something and there was something lacking, so I decided to re-engage as
an
adult.
That's so cool. So, like, did you find that, because they say learning a language when you're older is just, you know, physiologically more difficult. Did you find it a bit more difficult, like, compared to when you were younger?
You know, I suppose it's hard to tell because I felt that I maybe didn't have as much as I could have had as a child. So I didn't engage maybe as much as I should have. I can't blame the moon Tory. I can't blame the skull. I'm sure it was myself. But certainly as an adult, I suppose maybe once I made the decision, I suppose then I was motivated. And to come across a group like Sultan of Solon, where they have a very strong Irish language presence. So there's a brick fosta every Saturday morning in the middle of Naas, and you can go along, doesn't matter your level of Irish. And to find a group like that that's so welcoming really helps people to re-engage. So really, it doesn't matter what level of Irish you have. Like during Féilín na Solán this weekend, there will be something for you. It doesn't matter what age, what level of Irish.
That's one of the first questions that we ask people when they are speaking about, you know, festivals like this or organisations like this, is about, you know, your level of Irish. Because a lot of Irish people, you know, you were either in the classroom and kind of scolded if you didn't get it 100%, or you went to the Gaeltacht like I did and got absolutely, you know, scared out of your mind that you'd say one English word. That's the difficulty, I think. It's those memories, isn't it, that I guess put you off to a degree, because I see the pop of Gaeltacht here on the website and that brought me flashbacks of trying not to say anything in English.
Well, the pop of Gaeltacht definitely is a great event for any adult that wants to try out, have a bit of fun, and you definitely feel more fluent after a couple of drinks. There's no doubt about it. But there's nobody. There's going to be nobody there correcting you, saying, oh, that should have been in the Mo Canaloc. You know, that's not the point of this. The point of this is a fun weekend.
Yeah.
A weekend of music, a weekend of culture, a weekend of the Irish language. That is the entire point of this. There's nobody correcting anybody. And it is a fantastic opportunity
to have the language. Like, it's excellent. What about you, Dee? Do you feel like you've picked up your Irish a lot?
I have been trying a lot in recent years. You know, I do Duolingo, which I think is great.
Love an L Duolingo session.
Yeah, it's fun, isn't it? But, you know, it's going to events like this, you realise, like, I wouldn't have great Irish, not at all like Siobhan, but even just to be able to say Grimilabach, I've got Slán, Agus Tofalti Road, that's all you need, you know. All the events this weekend will be bilingual. There will be people there who have no Irish, by the way, and that's okay, you know, that's
very
absolutely
true.
Fine, because
there's
plenty of music and fun activities as well for all the family, all age groups, you know. We'd like to think we have something for everybody, you
and
know,
if we really focus on the events happening,
but
let me know a little bit about what's happening, let's say, beginning with Friday.
Yeah, well, Friday we have the lunch, and we always have an open trad music session in one of the local pubs. So this year it's in the Railway Inn. But then, you know, besides that then as well, we also have another event, Music Bingo Askelga, which is, you know, we were kind of discussing, we're not quite 100% sure what it's going to be, but it's going to be bingo with a twist.
Oh,
so
I love that.
Be a
love
bit
a good
of Irish
competition
in there as well.
Maybe some prizes.
Music.
There
are
prizes.
There are some prizes, yeah. So, you know, that's
a,
you know, sounds like fun. And then Saturday we've got, you know, there's a lot of kids events, you know, we've got singing and dancing. There's a magic show for kids in the morning as well.
Oh, and good. Get the energy out of them, I guess.
For adults. And there's Prosecco in the afternoon.
This is some festival.
Yeah. And then we have, we've an outdoor stage opposite Two Cooks there.
Yes,
at, you know,
yeah.
That area of sounds. We're blocking that off. And we'll have music there all afternoon and some dancing. But then also there's, you know, there's a shop that kind of does
a shopper.
We're talking about.
I know, I'm showing off now. I'm
yeah, shopper that they you bring stuff and show on.
Yeah, so this is a like a pop-up shop, a Siopa Sealadach, and it's all around sustainability and, you know, I suppose trying to get away from fast fashion. So the idea is that you can go along, you can bring something, you can swap something that you have for something else, or you can go and you can make a small donation, and the money will generally go to the Ukraine or maybe to the Red Cross. But the idea is that, you know, it is to try and encourage recycling. So we really do, we are trying to have a mixture of events that, you know, it really doesn't matter who you are or what you are. Like, I defy anybody to look at this programme and say, there's nothing there for me.
That's really, really cool. And just in terms of the pop-up shop, can people, you know, bring things to donate for the shop also? Is
absolutely.
It just a swap?
No, absolutely. Because there are things for sale, Well, for a donation,
yeah.
I suppose.
Yeah,
more
yeah,
for
yeah,
say.
I get you.
Yeah, so they're all, they'll always be open to taking in donations because they can then move along the next time they have it, that they'll, those items will be available for somebody else. So the idea is to reduce fast fashion. So absolutely, bring along, donate, swap. Yeah.
Okay, it's. I have to say I'm really impressed, really impressed. Congratulations to both of you. I'm sure a lot of work went into this. Even just, you know, the programme itself, it's really gorgeous and the imagery on it, I love it. If people, though, do want to get in touch with Sultna Salon and join, where can they go?
You can email olas@sultnasalon.ie. So EOLAS.sultnasalon, SultnaSalon.ie. And any questions. So say, for example, do you want to get involved in the festival committee next year? Get in touch. Sultna Salon has two festivals. We have one at Seachtain na Gaeilge as well. And that committee runs completely through Irish. Now, again, it doesn't matter what level of Irish, but that those committees, those meetings will be run through Irish. Or the Féile na Salon festival committee meetings are bilingual, but generally through English.
Okay.
So again, if you want to get involved, there's a way to get involved.
And it's good listening. That always helps you pick up on any language, isn't it, when you listen? So
absolutely.
Even just being around it is very good. Listen, it was lovely to meet both of you, Dee and Siobhan. Dee O'Connor and Siobhan Grogan from Sultna Salon. And of course, if anybody out there wants to get in touch with Sultna Salon, as Siobhan pointed out, the email olas.sultnasalon.ie. We'll have those details up on kfmradio.com, and we'll also have the details of Féile na Salon, obviously taking place this weekend, which is the 26th to the 28th. There's music events, cultural events, you know, we're talking about the pop-up shop, you know, all the fun for the kids. The pop-up Gael Talk is taking place, I see, as well. That's very fun.
And a barge trip as well. I forgot about that.
You have a what?
A barge trip. So if you want to listen to some music and, you know, have a little trip down the canal. There are three barge trips. They're an hour long each.
So I see that here. There's lots and lots. Yeah. So I advise people to get on to failinasalon.com and find out all the information. Thank you both so much for joining me. And thank you for listening this afternoon.